This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, April 19th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. When the pandemic first set in, it wasn't clear that the payments processor Stripe would be able to survive. But fast forward more than a year, and the company has emerged as one of the victors of the pandemic. Our financial technology reporter Peter Rudiger will join us to explain how the company did it and what its story tells us about how Silicon Valley has adapted to the pandemic. That's after these headlines. The worst drought in 50 years is hitting Taiwan, and that is a problem for the semiconductor industry. Taiwan is home to two-thirds of the world's chip manufacturing capacity, a process that requires tons of water. So far, the impact of the drought has been modest, but companies are starting to make adjustments as the government begins to ration the remaining water supply. The drought is just the latest in a series of natural disasters that have added strain to an ongoing shortage of semiconductors. Severe weather in Texas earlier this year forced Samsung to temporarily close two of its Austin chip factories. And the auto chipmaker Renesas was hit by an earthquake and a factory fire that executives say will take months to recover from. As NASA's Ingenuity helicopter begins its first test flights on Mars today, the space agency is also preparing for future missions. On Friday, NASA awarded a contract to Elon Musk's SpaceX to build a new capsule to land astronauts on the moon as early as 2024. The contract is part of a larger program to leverage private partnerships and commercial funding to explore and develop deep space. And at another of Musk's companies, Tesla, two men died after one of the company's vehicles crashed into a tree over the weekend near Houston. Local authorities believe the car was operating without anyone in the driver's seat, and said they were still investigating whether the vehicle's advanced driver assistance program, Autopilot, was enabled at the time of the crash. The news comes amid heightened regulatory scrutiny of Autopilot after several crashes involving Tesla vehicles. Neither Tesla nor the U.S.'s top safety regulator responded to requests for comment. Tesla tells drivers using Autopilot to pay attention to the road and to be prepared to take control of the vehicle. All right, coming up after the break, how the pandemic turbocharged a company that you might not even realize you've engaged with, the payments processor Stripe. That's next.
This podcast is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm you share something with, listening. They take the time to understand you and your business so you get the best solution, not more noise. Start a conversation at gt.com.
If you've bought something on Amazon recently, or through Instacart, or maybe Peloton, chances are you've indirectly used Stripe. It's a payments processor, so for every purchase you make through one of its customers, it gets a little cut of the sale. And as we've been making a lot more purchases online lately, Stripe's business has taken off. But it wasn't always clear that Stripe would be a winner of the pandemic. In fact, things looked pretty bleak in March and April of 2020. To tell us more about the challenges Stripe faced and how it overcame them, I'm joined now by our reporter, Peter Rudiger. He covers financial tech for us. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
So let's go back to the beginning here. When did Stripe first come on the scene, and what were those early days like?
It's been around for about a decade, founded by two Irish brothers, Patrick and John Collison, who dropped out of MIT and Harvard, respectively, to move to the West Coast and start this startup. They had founded other startups in the past, and this really basic thing of like getting paid or getting customers to pay them for their services was more difficult than they thought it should be, right? And this was, you know, 2010. PayPal had been around for over a decade. They told me that a lot of people in Silicon Valley that they talked to thought that online payments was a solved problem and that, you know, it's not a great idea to start a company devoted to this. But they decided to go ahead, and they focused on a group of customers that were particularly ignored by banks and other companies that did accept online payments. And that's other startups like themselves. So, you know, I mentioned a couple of them, Instacart and DoorDash. They were both part of the Silicon Valley accelerator called Y Combinator that Stripe also was in. And Stripe just sort of aggressively went after other Silicon Valley companies and saying, hey, use us to process your payments. It'll be a lot easier than, you know, going to a bank branch, filling out a ton of paperwork, and then probably being told no anyway.
And, you know, it seems like the pandemic was a bit of an inflection point for the company. So can you just bring us up to speed? Where was Stripe just before the pandemic hit? What did their business look like?
Sure. So just before the pandemic, you know, Stripe had been around for about a decade, had kind of graduated from just serving startups to serving big companies like Amazon and Salesforce. And they never gave strict numbers on volumes, but had said that they were processing somewhere in the hundreds of billions of dollars a year for millions of companies, not just in the US, but around the world. So the pandemic hits. I think the immediate outlook for Stripe wasn't so clear that it would be positive for them. If you'll remember, back in March, you had travel companies, you know, reporting that customers are seeking refunds. When something like that happens, not only does the company have to repay the customer, but if the company can't repay the customer, often it's the payment processor that's on the hook. So Stripe was looking at not just lower revenue because fewer people were taking vacations, but also might be out of money itself because they might have to fork over sums that they weren't counting on forking over.
Right. And I imagine that's just one example amid all of the other economic chaos happening at that point. You know, markets falling, a ton of uncertainty. Can you walk us through some more of the challenges that Stripe faced and how it got through them?
So in March and April, you had this doomsday scenario where, you know, economic growth could kind of come to a halt or reverse just because people weren't going to spend any money because they didn't know if they'd be laid off or if jobs would go away because of the pandemic. So Stripe itself had to retrench. I mentioned that, you know, travel companies were particularly exposed. And because Stripe didn't want to be holding the bag if they had to pay out refunds that their customers couldn't, they instituted some new restrictions on their customers, which kind of exacerbated an already tough situation. So we talked to one a husband and wife who own a few rental houses in Cape Cod. Stripe had told them that they were extending the amount of time that they would have to wait to get money from bookings from, you know, 1 or 2 days to about 2 weeks. And, you know, if you run a very tight margin business, that delay could mean a lot. So they, you know, they were pretty frustrated at Stripe. They were also one of the beneficiaries of the pandemic. Their business picked up, but they were so mad at Stripe that they actually asked customers to pay them with paper checks instead of online payments, just because they were not happy with the way they were treated. Stripe itself decided to do some things that it had never done before. Like I said, it was a startup and it likes to prize its secrecy and its finances, but they didn't want their customers worried that they would go out of business. So they preemptively said, don't worry, we have $2 billion of cash in our balance sheet. And oh, by the way, we just raised $600 million that we hope we don't need, but just in case, you know, you can count on Stripe, we'll be there for you. And so that got them through the March-April period. Then what sort of happened was everything moved online. So we mentioned that travel and events was not a good business to be in, but there were a lot of other businesses moving online that Stripe processed payments for that turned out to be doing really well. So we mentioned some of the big ones, Instacart, DoorDash, food delivery, you know, e-commerce. And then there were just all these new businesses that had never had to sell online before, you know, doctor's offices, farmers markets, companies that specialized in selling to restaurants that, because restaurants were closed, needed to open up online storefronts for the first time. All these businesses decided to move to the web. And when you move to the web, you need a payment processor to handle all those payments. And that's where Stripe came in and why Stripe benefited from those trends.
So where is the business now? What do we know?
So we know that they had a great year last year. Sources told us that their revenue increased 70% to about $7.5 billion. Now that that's stabilized and their business is growing, they're pushing forward on a strategy to become this kind of financial supermarket for other internet companies. So not just payments, but they want to offer loans, they want to offer bank accounts, and not necessarily to their customers, but their customers of their customers. So one of Stripe's biggest customers is Shopify. You know, millions of entrepreneurs set up stores on Shopify to sell anything online, and Stripe wants to give those end customers of Shopify loans. One other thing we reported was that Stripe is eyeing and moving closer to an initial public offering. So they're one of the older startups in Silicon Valley now. Like I said, they were started about a decade ago. With a recent fundraising, they're the most highly valued at a valuation of around $95 billion. And it won't be too much longer before investors in the public markets are able to buy a little piece of Stripe. So we reported that they recently hired a CFO from General Motors. They are also working to upgrade their own internal financial infrastructure to handle kind of the pace of quarterly earning reports and all the other demands on a public company. That upgrade plan is supposed to conclude by the fourth quarter of this year. So starting then, they could choose to pursue an IPO if they wanted to.
So it sounds like they've taken some steps to shore up their business for the future. And I think a really big question is, you know, with the pandemic coming to an end, is there a danger that they could lose some of the growth and momentum that they've built because of that shift in consumer behavior that the pandemic brought?
Yeah, I think we're not going to see the same sort of acceleration in e-commerce next year that we saw this year, right? I think a firm called eMarketer predicted that the pandemic brought forward by about 2 years the penetration of e-commerce relative to retail sales in the overall economy. So it's totally possible that Stripe's growth rate will slow. Just given some of these habits die hard, I don't know how much of that they'll kind of give back as people start, you know, venturing out and paying more. So you see trends like buying online or picking up in store. I don't know how often people want to go into, you know, a Best Buy or a department store. Same thing with groceries, right? Groceries is one category that didn't really move online before the pandemic. And now that, you know, a lot of people discover that they can order, you know, food and realize they're not getting the wilted lettuce or the rotten apples, that might just be a convenience that they choose to partake, even if they can go in person.
Peter, is there a takeaway here? What does Stripe's story say about the way that the tech industry has adapted to the pandemic and how it's moving past it?
A couple of people told me that what Stripe is at its core is a index fund almost for not just Silicon Valley, but e-commerce broadly, right? So we don't know for sure if Uber Eats or Seamless or DoorDash is going to win the food delivery wars. But in any one of those situations, you know, Stripe is a beneficiary, right? Because it processes payments for a lot of them. So, you know, there are other companies in Silicon Valley that have brand names, that have kind of snazzy apps and are much better known than Stripe. But Stripe kind of shows that if you are the infrastructure behind all these companies, and also just that if you have broad exposure to startups in Silicon Valley, that is also a part of the economy that's fast growing, that seems very resilient to some of these other trends we're talking about. And that, you know, maybe a decade ago you thought, and certainly Stripe's competitors thought, it wasn't worth it to chase these businesses of startups. They might be here today, gone tomorrow. But as we've seen over the past decade, a lot of these companies have staying power, and that if you have a strong base of support among them, you can grow alongside them.
All right. That's our fintech reporter, Peter Rudiger. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.